Well, Sine Die is taking place, and the 2024 Virginia General Assembly is in the books. But what really happened? What are the policies that will impact our lives? And what is going to happen with the budget? It's Stay the Water. I'm your host, Dr. Eric LaVille. Stay tuned as we talk with none other than Senator Aaron Rouse about the talkback of this General Assembly. Welcome back. It's Stay the Water. I'm your host, Dr. Eric LaVille. As always, we want to thank you for joining us, as you always do, on this Sunday morning, sharing your time with us as we bring you the latest and greatest impactful information about our community, Hampton Roads, and the nation with public policy and law. So again, we're broadcasting from the campus of the Norfolk State University, home of the greatest and the best HBCU in the Commonwealth and the country, led by very own President Adams Gaston, and broadcasting from none other than WNSB Hot 91, the soul of VA, the hottest station in the land. And as always, we'd like to thank all of our supporters for the work that you have done to help us. And before I go on, I'd just like to congratulate the NSU Spartans for winning the regular season MEAC Championship and for their outstanding performance in this year's MEAC Tournament. MEAC Tournament was a success all the way around. So we thank everybody from the MEAC for coming down, supporting the city of Norfolk, and thank the city for supporting MEAC, because it all works together. So we're looking forward to 2025 season. And again, congratulations to all the teams, especially our Spartans, for their hard work throughout the year. So with that being the case, listen, for those of you that have joined us since January, you know one of my favorite times of the year is talking about the General Assembly. That's right. We have our annual General Assembly review, where we talk about issues and we bring our policymakers on and we look at the laws that are being debated and passed during this time in the session. We always talk about government. Government works only because it works for you, and it works better because of you. And we believe that if you are well informed, especially from this show and others, then you can make a more meaningful impact in your lives and the lives of everyone in your community, and ultimately for your family for generations to come. But you know, it's a process to it. And I see myself as a tour guide sometimes through that process. I see myself a lot as a teacher, instructor through that process. But one thing about it is that I'm blessed to be a part of that process. And not only that, but we're blessed as an institution to have so many friends in the legislature. And we have none other than one of our biggest friends, our greatest friends, my guy, joining us from the city of Virginia Beach. And that's none other than Senator Aaron Rouse, 22nd City District in Virginia Beach. Senator Rouse, thank you for joining us from State of Water.
Thank you for having me, Dr. Clavel. Glad to be here again.
Well, listen, like I said, you're no stranger to NSU. You know, you've been on the show many times. You've been on campus many times. And NSU has played a significant part in your life. You know, just remind us a little bit, our listeners, you know, what NSU means to you.
NSU is home. You know, initially where I'm from. I'm from the city of Norfolk, which is where I was born, down there in Young Terrace.
Young Terrace?
Called Dump Heart back in the day.
That's right.
and so NSU, I remember what NSU used to, marching band used to come all the way down Virginia Beach Boulevard. You know, they should come out the park and be glad to see NSU and the marching band and the cheerleaders and the whole entire school just come out, show support for the community. And so that's what I remember as a kid growing up before moving to the city of Virginia Beach. So NSU is definitely home.
Absolutely. Now, we know you're a Virginia Tech, you know, football star. I know Tech played a significant part in your life, you know, taking you all the way to the NFL, doing great things. But you never forgot about NSU and the mark that it made on your life. And for that, we're extremely grateful to have you as a friend and extremely grateful to know that NSU has played that part in your life.
Absolutely.
So listen, we want to get right into it. You know, we want to, you know, you've been in the legislature, and one thing about you is that you were adamant that after you left your career in football, professional football, reaching the apex, you know, of an individual in that particular field, you said, I want to come back home and be a public servant. Now, not many people have that dream. Not, you know, as a professional athlete, you travel a lot. You see a lot of great places. You know, but you said, I want to come back home. You know, what was the reason? What was that draw? What was that pull for you to come back home and serve your community?
Yeah, I think first and foremost, coming from where, you know, we come from the city of Norfolk and St. Paul's Quadrant, you know, moving to SeaTac, another historically black community in Virginia Beach. You know, I wanted to come back and make sure, you know, folks who, you know, can relate to how I grew up, we have similar stories, but also just from our community and region that, you know, we are more than just athletes, we're more than just, you know, entertainers, but we are scholars as well. Be whatever we want to be by, you know, being educated and by broadening our horizons. You know, we don't have to be what society tries to make us out to be. So right. For me, coming home, I want to have more of an impact and show, you know, future generations and in our community, you know, that, look, I played football. That was great. I had a lot of fun. But also now I want to be in a position to allocate those resources to our community that has been historically underappreciated, you know, undervalued. But I also want to serve as a guiding light and principle to, you know, people from all different backgrounds. Say, hey, that's someone that never forgot where he came from, but also that's someone who's trying to uplift everyone in the Commonwealth and everyone that he comes across. So, yeah, I enjoy, you know, a public service.
Awesome. You know, with a heart like that, and, you know, we need more public servants with that. You know, so because I think we'll be in a better place if we do. So speaking of public servant, we just had Sonny die on March 9th. You know, that's the end of the legislative session. That's a long 60 days that all of us, the legislators, yourself, and the government relations professionals, and everybody that makes that engine run are away from their families, you know, making sure that the Commonwealth is in a better place. So,
yes.
You know, give us a reflection about your time, this 60 days. Do you think it was a success?
Yeah, I think it was a good success, not just speaking from a, you know, a Democrat, you know, perspective, but just from a General Assembly perspective, to whereas even my colleagues on the other side of the aisle have, you know, disagreements, but for the most part, the General Assembly session were pretty smooth. And I think when we actually take a look back at what we were able to accomplish, I think, you know, Democrats across the board have a lot to be proud about. But what I'm most proud of is that we have a lot of new members in the Senate. They came to the Senate this year, and for the most part, we seem to have that transition has been very, very smooth in ensuring that we're doing the people's work.
You know, the people's work, and that's one thing that I saw a big contrast in the policies that were put up by the Democrats and contrasted with the Republicans. You know, mm-hmm. a lot of the bills that were put up and ultimately passed by the Dems really talked to, you know, the everyday needs of the Commonwealth people. And I want you to start thinking about this now, but I want you to think about at least one, two, or three of those bills that you believe were extremely important in this session. And we're going to talk about that in the second part. But but before we do that, I want you to also reflect upon NSU Day on the Hill and the importance of bringing our students to the Capitol in order to see the process. And for those of you that are listening, NSU Day on the Hill is our day at Norfolk State University, where we go up, we take two busloads, and we take students, administrators, alumni, faculty, and we go on Capitol Hill and we flood it, right? And we're visiting with legislators, we're advocating for our initiatives that we have, and we're visiting from everyone from the House Speaker to our senator that we're talking to now, to our legislators in Richmond. And by the way, Norfolk State has more legislators who are alums serving in the General Assembly than all other HBCU graduates combined in Virginia.
Wow.
Right. So that's the Spartan value, right? Right.
That's right.
And, you know, a lot of them have been very instrumental, you know, in your time there. You know, but with that, you know, it's our day to go up. And one of the most impactful moments that we see every year are these young minds that are studying the theory, but they see it and they get inspired and say, I can do this.
That's right.
And you were actually our first speaker that we had, you know, so give us a little reflection about that time that you spent with our students.
Well, I'm always, you know, inspired to see NSU in the General Assembly building. But I'm also inspired to see all the young folks that you all bring up. And not just young folks, like you said, your staff as well. Because it's one thing, you know, to talk about politics and to even learn about it. It's another thing to see it in action and to see how your tax dollars, how your voting rights are actually in action and how it plays a pivotal part in crafting legislation. So just seeing NSU in the General Assembly was, you know, it's inspirational, but at the same time, it's incredibly proud because you understand, even if when those students and staff came up and even if they didn't ask a question or may not share an idea or concern, they were in the room, they were in the building, and they had got an opportunity to see politics up close and personal, and hopefully it inspired them to want to also be involved. And not necessarily involvement doesn't mean getting elected, but being a part of their community, which many of them were, which I was very, very happy to see. Many of them were, and they are a part of their communities. They were outspoken, and they asked some great questions. And so anytime we have an opportunity to introduce that next generation of leaders, and I say next generation of leaders, but they are present-day leaders as well, but anytime we have an opportunity to introduce them into that new environment, that helps our communities out tenfold, because maybe one day they do become an elected official. And I think that's always great.
Absolutely. Absolutely. It's Stay the Water. I'm your host, Dr. Eric LaVille. You're joining us for our very first show for the 2024 Virginia General Assembly Review. Joining us is none other than my good friend, my guy, and a friend of NSU, and that's Senator Aaron Rouse, representing the 22nd District out of the city of Virginia Beach, where he grew up. After his career in professional football, he wanted to come back home and serve his community. You know, so we talked about earlier the policies that were put up and the comparing and contrasting the policies that the Democrats, which you're a Democrat, and the Republicans both champion, you know, that they thought were best, each side, for the people of the Commonwealth. Mm-hmm. You know, talk about a few of those policies, those bills, and those maybe some that passed and maybe some that didn't, that you thought were the most impactful this session.
Well, I think, you know, as you know, I chair Privilege and Elections Committee. We call it P&E for short. And some of the most impactful bills, it starts with protecting our democracy. Bills I carry to protect voting rights. I believe, you know, last year there were over 3,400, Virginians whose voting rights were taken away, were purged from the voting rolls. And so what this bill attempted to do, I carry and was able to pass both chambers, is to protect voting rights, to ensure that no one is removed from, you know, the voter registration without having due process. In fact, ensuring that the confidence level, when we talk about confidence level, that just means making sure that the identity of a person matches who they who DMV, who the voter registration say they are, ensuring that those confidence levels are higher and holds more value, so that no one could mistakenly be voting rights could be taken away. We passed that bill. But also ensuring that early voting is a mainstay, is here in, you know, the Commonwealth. Right? We actually had a Republican colleague come before my committee and say we have too many days of voting in Virginia. They actually said that on an open mic. So actually trying to roll back early voting, that's a huge impact for, you know, our Commonwealth. And I think, you know, what we saw in this past election is you saw the governor and they had a whole campaign about early voting. Well, one of the first bills that they put in was to take your early voting rights away, which was very hypocritical, to say the least.
You know, and look, before you go on, I just have to ask, I mean, are we still fighting over voting? I mean, is that really where the other side is putting their chips on the table?
Yeah. I mean, surprisingly so. There's so many things that we actually could we should be working on, not just from a Democrat perspective, but we should be collaborating on, and that's, you know, minimum wage hike, making sure that everybody has at least a $15 an hour minimum wage in the state of Virginia or the Commonwealth of Virginia, but also make sure a livable wage, trying to make sure affordable housing is actually affordable throughout our communities. Another bill that I carried was one that, you know, tried to protect our first responders from toxic exposure when they go off and try to protect our communities as well. We passed a number of legislations to give those residents who are maybe renting an apartment or home, give them consumer protection and make sure the landlords are holding their side of, you know, a residential contract and making sure that the home or dwelling is up to code and up to standards. And so we passed a lot of meaningful bills. We passed made it funding in the budget towards mental health, make sure those resources were there. But we also made another impactful funding to K through 12 education, not only just for our teachers and 3% raise for our teachers, but also raises and resources for our support staff as well. So we've done a lot of good things for the people of our Commonwealth. One of the things I carry and tried to implement and was able to get it to the governor's desk, he hasn't taken action on it yet. But is, you know, the marijuana bill when it comes to adult retail market. Now, this was a heavy piece of legislation for Dr. Colville, as you know, hope many, and I want to inform many of your listeners, this bill does not legalize marijuana. Marijuana was already legalized in the state of Virginia, 3 years ago now, I want to
say? That's right. That's right. Under the Northern administration. So, yeah.
Right. Right. And so what this bill attempts to do is structure the adult retail market. When I mean structure, it means to cash it, regulate it, and enforce it. Not just, you know, trying to secure $1.2 billion of potential revenue for the Commonwealth, but also trying to drive down the way the illicit market, all right? The black market where these young folks are killing each other over, you know, marijuana sales and things of that nature, where they're getting their hands on these products that are untested, that are unsafe, that can be laced with all kind of hazardous type of ingredients as well. And so, and then also, you know, on the other side of it is trying to make sure that when we talk about social equity, that those who have been historically criminalized when it comes to marijuana, that they have an opportunity now to start a business and generate wealth, not only for themselves, but for their family and future generations of their family. That was a major sticking point, and it's the reason why my version, the Senate version of the bill, is the vehicle that's on the governor's desk. Awesome. I know that was a lot. So.
But it's good, and really it's not a lot, because there were over 2,000 bills that were presented, you know, and of course, you know, the bills that actually made it through the process, that actually made it to the governor's desk, is even less than that. But when you talk about the impact, I mean, you just mentioned making sure that there's a structure behind something that's already legalized to decrease violence. But also you talked about voting, you know, which is really the most important aspect of our democracy. Because if you're not voting, by the way, if you're not voting, my listeners, if you're not voting, you need to start voting, because it is your right. Not only is your right, but many people bled and died for your right, our right to vote. And we vote, and we can put great people in office, just like Senator Rouse, that champion a lot of these good policies to help everyday people.
Different.
You know, I there's one piece that you kind of left out, and I want to like bring it up. But in the city of Virginia Beach, you know, there was a voting scheme, you know, a structure that basically disenfranchised, you know, individuals, more specifically, African-Americans and people of color. And, you know, it disenfranchised them for decades. And we had leadership in Virginia Beach that did not look like us, that didn't know anything about our communities and basically ignored them for the most part. You know, but a 10-1 a voting scheme was actually agreed upon, and of course, passed down by the federal court. In order for Virginia Beach to be in line and with the rest of the state and the country to have their representatives chosen. Talk a little bit about Virginia Beach, what it used to be, what it is now, and the issue that arose during the session where we had to have the press conference.
Yeah, so again, just a very, very brief history. The city of Virginia Beach had a hybrid voting system. What essentially what it meant is that you just had to live in an area that you want to represent, but yet everyone in the city could vote for you. So imagine if you lived in a majority-minority district, right? And yet you chose someone who knows your community, who you can relate to, who looks like you, who understands, you know, your specific culture. You elect that person, you know, or choose that person to represent you, and yet the rest of the city votes for someone else. And they have historically done that. And Dr. Clavel, let me just say, this is not just about people of color, but because we also do have a thriving and beautiful Filipino community here, one of the largest, you know, on the East Coast here in the city of Virginia Beach. And still to this day, there's only ever been one Filipino American ever elected to the city of Virginia Beach. So it's not just African Americans, but it's been all minorities have seldomly been elected to the city of Virginia Beach prior to the 10-1 system. So the federal court said, hey, you have to go to a 10-1 system because two African-American ladies challenged the hybrid voting system and said it discriminated and it diluted minorities' voting power. The federal courts agreed, upholding Section 2 of the Voting Rights Act of 1965. And so they put in a 10-1 system. But mind you, Virginia Beach City, former city council, chose to spend over $7+ million trying to appeal that decision. In that meantime, Virginia Voting Rights Act passed and said, yeah, that system, you can't have that system no more in place because it goes against Virginia Voting Rights Act. So you have state law that's changed. You already have federal law that's changed. You have the Attorney General Mieres, who comes in, who's on the Youngkin administration. He comes in and he pre-clears the 10-1 election system twice with no objection. He pre-clears it twice. And this is the 2022 election. Virginia Beach goes through, has the election, 2022 election, and it yields the most diverse city council ever with four African-Americans serving. That has never happened in the history of the city of Virginia Beach, but also you have generational diversity as well, and also economic diversity as well. So you have the most diverse city council ever. And so the city of Virginia Beach went forward and said, okay, we going to get in alignment with state law and with federal law. They passed an ordinance, said we have a 10-1 system now, and now we just need to update the charter. That is the bill that I carry in the Senate. It passed unanimously out the Senate. It passed with a 2/3 majority vote in the House. It sits on the governor's desk. But as you understand, as many of you may have seen, the governor decides to hold that up. Now, why that is so surprising, because over 81% of the people of Virginia Beach supports this 10-1 system, over 81%. Not only that, again, as I already previously stated, it's been pre-cleared by someone in his own administration, his attorney general. Federal courts are already said 10-1, and then state law has already come along and said, hey, this has to be in alignment with state law. The election system has to be in alignment with Virginia Voting Rights Act. So you have all these things, and the charter is essentially the last thing. So the question remains, why would the governor want to hold us up?
Well, you know, again, you know, I've talked about it before. When you take a look at voting, you know, it's about getting the numbers, but it's also about creating the scheme behind it, the process behind it. So you may be outnumbered, but if you create a process to where even those who are outnumbered can still win elections, if the process works for you, you have the answer. You know, and keep in mind, Virginia Beach itself is really what we call in Hampton Roads, the epicenter of power. You know, you have, of course, the governor, the lieutenant governor, and also the Attorney General, all from Virginia Beach, and two still living there. And then also here in Hampton Roads in Portsmouth, you have the heads of two, the most powerful, the House and the most powerful Senate committee. So when you take a look at Hampton Roads, when you take a look at why it's still sitting, it's because it's about power.
That's right.
You know, so when the people speak, that's when power, those that hold power, become nervous. And that's when it's time to continue moving, continue championing, continue to make sure that the policies that are passed, that are at the governor's desk, are signed into law.
That's right.
You know, we have a few minutes left. I want to kind of delve into a couple of things. One, you know, looking forward, you know, we've looked back. Now I like looking forward. What do you think are some things, impactful issues that are important to Virginians and African-Americans in the next coming session? And then what's your prediction on the budget?
Well, I think some of the most impactful issues going forward in the upcoming session is obviously codifying a restoration of rights for those who may have been convicted of a felon at one point in time and lost their rights, but making sure that they can get their rights back, putting that into Virginia Code. Also, when we talk about protecting women's rights, those constitutional amendments, and I think we have a lot of things we're looking forward to doing. And affordable housing, you know, housing is still a huge issue as well. And so we have to tackle that. I honestly think that it's going to take more than just state focus, but it's going to have to be a combination because local levels dictate their zoning laws, laws. And so it'll take a state partnership as well as a federal partnership as well when it comes to strategic growth areas and that type of perspective. But then also when we talk about funding our HBCUs to the levels they should have been funded to, historically should have been funded at a much higher level, making sure they get their equity that they are due. I think that is another huge impactful issue. And as far as you know, budget concerns go, I think you have a governor that's, you know, he's creating a narrative. He's already been saying this backwards budget. Well, what's backwards about taking care of the people of Virginia? What's backwards about ensuring, you know, Medicaid expansion, supporting K-12 education, the staff, the teachers, supporting law enforcement officers and first responders, supporting our HBCUs and mental health? What's backwards about that? I don't understand that type of narrative that he's trying to create. And so, you know, my thoughts on the budget is we're going to see in about 29 days, you know, reconvene session.
Yep.
So we're going to see.
Well, listen, one thing we do know is that something's going to happen. But at the end of the day, politics is about compromise. It's about making sure that we have the best policies that we can agree upon. We, you know, we don't have to always agree all the time, but that we can agree upon at that moment to make sure that the people of the Commonwealth are better today than they were yesterday. And we have you in part to thank for that. Listen, thank you as always for joining us, my good friend, here on State of Water, giving us your perspective on policies today and for your work, again, that you do on behalf of your community, your city, and the Commonwealth of Virginia. Thank you so much for joining us.
Thank you for having me. Always a pleasure.
And as always, continue to listen to us, continue to be great, be good, and God bless. We'll see you next week.
Hi, I'm Carrie Washington, and you're listening to State of the Water with award-winning host, Dr. Eric Claville.